So how do we do something different than this? How do we shift from note taking to note making, which is where the students take ownership? They are responsible for it. They're using notes as a way to consolidate their learning, including the learning that happened in the consolidation. How are they going to represent?
Hey there, Math Mo Makers. In this episode, you are going to learn practical strategies for dynamic teaching. You're going to learn how to adapt your teaching style to meet the evolving needs of your students, ensuring that each lesson is effective as possible. We're going to talk innovative note-taking strategies. You're going to discover a structured note-taking strategy from Peter Littledahl on a method that not only aids in student learning, but also encourage active participation and reflection. You're about to hear part two of our webinar, or our keynote session from the 2023 Make Math Moments Virtual Summit with Peter Littledahl. We titled that How to Consolidate and Close Your Building Thinking Classrooms Lesson. This is part two. We had part one, so we split the session, the hour-long keynote session, into two episodes. If you are hearing this and you did not hear part one, head back to episode 270. It's a couple episodes before this, and give that one a listen, and then come back here and listen to part two on how to consolidate and close your building thinking classroom lessons. It is Kyle Pierce, myself, John Orr, and Peter Littledahl. We are talking all about how to closing that lesson. We specifically talk about note-taking in this episode. So go ahead, click or continue to listen to this. You don't have to click anything. You're already listening to this, and we're going to dig right in. Here we go.
Welcome to the Making Math Moments That Matter podcast. I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr. We are from MakeMathMoments.com.
This is the only podcast that coaches you through a six-step plan to grow your mathematics program, whether at the classroom level or at the district level.
And we do that by helping you cultivate and foster your mathematics program like a strong, healthy, and balanced tree.
If you master the six parts of an effective mathematics program, the impact of your math program will grow and reach far and wide.
So what we're talking about here, what you're talking about here, is a sort of consolidation that uses student work that's a gallery walk, right? Which works really well when we use a divergent task. A divergent task is like a three-act task or anything where I give the task and 10 groups to go in eight different directions, right? And now we can go and look at, we can look at different solutions because there's so much richness in the ways they're thinking. And like you said, we can go from most common to least common. We can also go from most accessible to least accessible. We can go from basic to complex, or we can go from concrete to abstract. There's lots of ways to progress, and there's a lot of redundancy between those. But just because a student is up here at the uncommon doesn't mean they went through common. Not every student followed the progression that the consolidation is going to take us on. A lot of students jumped in here. It's a flip of a coin. Let's do it this way. But they didn't get to see the other solutions. And they're standing there going, that would have made a lot more sense. That was way easier for me to understand than we were wrestling with this complex thing up here, right? And so there's interest in that. Now, what if it's not a divergent task? What if it's a convergent task? Meaning like, okay, we're multiplying three-digit numbers. We're turning decimals into fractions or vice versa. We're doing areas of complex shape for factoring quadratics, solving systems of linear equations. We're ordering integers, or we are simply completing patterns at a younger grade. These are not so divergent. Yes, we're going to see a variety, but they're not super divergent. So if you skip ahead a couple of slides here, we're going to see an example of how the new consolidation for a divergent or a convergent task looks like. We're going to do more teacher scribe. So here's two examples. So this is what this consolidation that's not in the book, but we've been playing with a lot, which is, okay, how do I consolidate a lesson on patterns or factoring quadratics? And the way we have found works really well is that I put up three questions, and I'm going to be the scribe here. I'm going to put up three questions, and then I gather the students around the board, and I say, I've put up three questions from today's lesson, but I may have put them in the wrong order. What order should the questions be in and why? And as the audience is watching this, we always say, turn and talk to the person next to you. What order should these questions be in and why? And what's amazing about that is grade 4 to grade 12, they get the order right every single time. But what's even more interesting is the conversations they have, because they're looking at those patterns and they're going, well, the middle one's first because I can continue that pattern. The second one would be the top one because, like, I can work backwards on that pattern. But that third one at the bottom, I got to do some trial and error. I got to think about it really hard. Like, that's the conversations they're having, unprompted by me, just simply saying, what order should they be in and why? Same with the second one there. They're going, yeah, the bottom one is definitely the easiest one. That's the one that should be first, right? Everything's positive, right? The top one's probably second. I got some negatives in there. And that middle one, whew, that's tricky with that three in the front, right? So what they're doing is they're noticing and naming variance and invariance. You used that term yourself. You said noticing and naming. They're noticing and naming here. We don't have to go look at other whiteboards, because if we're looking at other whiteboards, like, there's no work on the boards, because this is the kind of work that happens in discussion and then answers hit the board. So we have to create more thinking in this consolidation space by doing this. But what's even more interesting is what we do next. So if you go to the next image, just advance one. So here is those same quadratic ones. If you just advance once more, it'll start playing automatically. Is how do we actually progress through the solving of this as a class now, right? So now we've figured out that the bottom one is first. The students are telling me this top one second, the middle one's third. Now what do? Right? We go, okay, well, is there something I can do on the first one? Is there something I can do right away without too much thinking? I can put the parentheses, they're telling me. So I do that. But here's the interesting part. Can I do that on the second one too? Oh, I can. Can I do that on the third one? Yeah, I can. Okay, what? Go back to the first one. Is there something else I can do? And this is going to keep playing. And what you're going to see is that we're moving. We're not solving all of one together. I'm acting as a scribe. We're jumping. And what are we seeing? What are the students seeing when we do that?
I love it, because you're giving them, again, not only the opportunity to think, but it's really about trying to uncover those behaviors as we're talking about, right? So we're truly going like, so this isn't random here. Mathematics is really logical. It really hurts your soul as math teachers. It doesn't matter what grade you're in when students go, none of this makes sense.
Yeah.
And I mean, I used to hear that in the early days teaching. And I recognized now, many years later, that, oh my gosh, well, of course it didn't make any sense. They were just following me blindly, right?
Yeah.
And in reality here, you're allowing them to truly think through it and really trying to figure out what the heck is going on here. And of course, you as the facilitator are there to guide that conversation, right? Not to shut down ideas, not to tell a student like, nice try, but no, but you just do what they say and let it break itself. Let the rule take over. Like, okay, so you're saying to do this, let's try that.
Yeah, or I'm going to write what you say, and then someone else in the room is going to go, no, that's not what they meant, right? So it's like, we have to allow the room to breathe here, but I'm driving the bus, right? I've picked these three tasks, and I'm saying, what can I do on this one? Can I do the same on that one? And when doing that, what the kids are starting to see is how these tasks are connected and where the connection stops, where the differences are. They're seeing the invariance and they're seeing the variance. And it's, so this isn't three distinct tasks anymore. And this is a full range of what happened in a lesson. That video that you played earlier of the kids working, that was this lesson. They covered the entire sequence of factoring quadratics in this lesson. They went from having never seen it before to factoring quadratics where the leading coefficient was greater than one and not a prime number. Now, how do we then consolidate that? Right? Doing a gallery walk is not going to work, not with this kind of task. We have to come up with a different type of consolidation that's still, think about that video of that consolidation, is still consolidating from the bottom. It's still noticing and naming. It's still achieving all of those things, but we're doing it for a type of task that a gallery walk doesn't work well for.
I want to mention something I saw in the chat here, and then, sorry, John, I'll let you jump in there, but I saw a few people saying, like, So is this the consolidation stage? And I think sometimes we look for like, does it always look this exact way? And what I'm hearing you say, and I want to be super explicit for everybody in the chat, is that no, we have to figure out what do we want kids to take away and how can we help to bring this and draw this out. So you've done sort of a great job here with a scenario like this where you're going, and you said it, I'll reiterate it, that a gallery walk, you might still do a gallery walk and have a look, but ultimately that's not going to do the trick, is that we've got to be very, very explicit. And we could either do it the old way, which is, all right, now you did all this work. Now here's exactly what you learned. Bang, 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 bang. But guess what? Over time, kids are going to go, he's going to tell me anyway.
Yeah.
Or we could do something like you've described here. Now, when I say that something like, which means it might look very different for a different topic or a different concept. The real question comes down to, again, last year's session, we talked a lot about intentionality, right? And the intentionality, all of the thinking is to get us to the place where we can go, they're going to walk away knowing blank. And when I say blank, that could be multiple blanks, right? It could be many different things. It might be a model. It might be a strategy. It might be a process or a procedure. But ultimately, at the end of the day, we've got to be clear on that. We don't just want kids thinking for thinking's sake, even though that's amazing and it gives teachers so much happiness when it happens. Yeah. We really need that work to be leading us towards what I'll call the real work, which is kids understanding what it was that they were thinking about.
And it's like I said, here's the difference. With a gallery walk, I'm trying to pull the consolidation out of the boards, right? With this type of consolidation, I'm trying to pull the consolidation out of the discourse. Because when the students are at the whiteboards doing this type of a task, a thin slicing task, the boards don't carry the thinking. The thinking happened in discussion. So looking at the boards isn't going to help. I need to now recreate some of that discussion and then create some sort of an artifact and an experience out of it so that I can pull from their discussions the thoughts and organize and structure and formalize them here. I see lots of questions. Well, what would this look like in this unit? What will it look like in this topic? The answer is this. You pick three tasks from your sequence that they got through, right? You pick three tasks, you jumble the order, and you ask them to unscramble it. That's how you start. What order should they be in? And then, okay, let's go to the first one. The one you've labeled for one, what can I do first here? What's my first step? Does the first step work on the second task too? Can I do that same first step? Will it work on the third one, right? And what we're trying to do is highlight the parts where there is invariance, but then also talk about when there is variance. Now, I said earlier, this works amazing 4 to 12. K to 3 is a bit of a different animal because in K to 3, when I say put these back in order, I got kids going, I like the second one best because it's got a 7 in it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And I want it to be really hard. So we're going to start there. And like, okay, yeah, you're missing the point a little bit.
That's like a small example, though, of what happens in lessons where we leave the strings untied right at the end, right? Kids walk out. They go, that was a really cool task. And it was, if it was a contextual task, which we try to use context whenever we can, we use a contextual task. They go, that was great. You know, they were salting the driveway and we found out that it took this many bags of salt. And we're like, it was about dividing fractions. That, you know, like that's what we're really trying to do.
It was about salting the driveway. Yeah.
We need to make sure that those ends are tied.
So for Heidi from Hawaii, just so you know, Heidi, that means that salting is what we do when it gets cold and we get ice. Right?
Yeah. Peter, we got to chat about making meaningful notes and using meaningful notes, because I think that topic on our podcast is the one that I think we still get asked about the most. What that looks like, what are the examples? Walk us through now that, like, let's say we've had the meaningful discussions. Let's talk about note taking. And because I think a lot of people are saying we're not note taking, we're just working at the boards.
Hey, Math Moment Makers, Kyle here. And I've got just a quick message specifically for our district level mathematics decision makers out there. Do you feel like you're spinning your wheels when making district level goals for mathematics programming from kindergarten through grade 12? setting new goals each year only to find little to no real shift in pedagogical practice or educator content knowledge across the district as a whole? Take a moment to book a short call with our team so we can learn more about your specific district and educator learning needs in mathematics so we can assist you in taking the first step of many in the right direction. Visit makemathmoments.com/district to book a web call with our team today. We have a limited number of spots for districts just like yours, so don't wait. Head to makemathmoments.com/district and grab a spot in our calendar now.
Oh, yeah. And note-taking, or like if you just advance to the next one, I think what's going to happen. Yeah, and then once more, and then we're going to just see. Here's that sort of I write, you write note that we all grew up loving, right? We'd sit in our desks and for 27 and a half minutes, we'd be writing notes. And then, you know, I'm in classrooms and teachers are going, and like we saw this earlier, time is such an issue. I'm so out of time. And I'm watching this and I'm going, well, that's 27 and a half minutes. We're never going to get back. So how do we do something different than this? How do we shift from note taking to note making, which is where the students take ownership? They are responsible for. They're using notes as a way to consolidate their learning, including the learning that happened in the consolidation. How are they going to represent this in such a way that what's in their head gets out on paper? So we played with a whole bunch of different things early on, and you can advance through this. We tried limiting space and that worked okay. We tried graphic organizers. That was really good. We tried this model and pause here. This is sort of the Cornell model or the Frary model, which is we're just going to divide into four quadrants. And these worked okay. We went from 20% of kids being cognitively engaged to 60 to 80% being cognitively engaged. And we went from 10% looking back at their notes to 60 to 80% looking back at their notes. So this was a huge improvement. But we still had 20 to 40% of kids opting out, going, yeah, I'll remember it. Never underestimate a student's ability to overestimate their ability.
Right? So, that was totally me.
Yeah. So we kept, and here comes the new format. The format that works so well. If you advance to the next one, I think the next one's even, this is what the student's work looks like when they've been doing it. It always follows the same structure. Yeah. It's four quadrants. And I know Richard's on here, and Richard just posted a whole bunch of on Twitter today of what this looks like. It's four quadrants. Quadrant one, top left-hand corner, is a fill-in-the-blank setup. Okay. And it is shot through with structure and formalism. This is where I'm actually trying to get them to showcase what it looks like, right? The second one is I'm giving them the task. And I want them to turn it into a worked example. Now, those words are very particular. It's not, I don't want you to get the answer. I want you to use this task as a way to showcase your understanding and your learning today for your future forgetful self. What are you going to put in quadrant two, which is top right-hand corner, so that 3 weeks from now, you remember what you did today? Quadrant three, which is a bottom right-hand corner, is you pick your own example. You choose what you want to do, right? But I've given you some restrictions on one area and perimeter. And then quadrant four is things to remember. And if you back it up to where we actually see a student example, you can see that they're doing it. They're showcasing. You can actually see in that example one, top right-hand corner, how they're showing what it is that they're thinking, right? And then they pick their own. And then they're showing what they were doing. You can actually see the little arrows explaining where things are coming from.
This works great, Peter, because I had always done note-taking as a priority after our consolidation before we had the discussion a couple months ago on the podcast. And when I started this year's classes, I moved to your four quadrants. And what I love about, say, your own is that it keeps the thinking going. And I think that's what happens is like when we start to take notes, it's like, oh, I'm going to show you this one. And then I'm going to show you this one. So we're putting it down for our future forgetful self, but they're still the ones going like, I'm going to create this one. And some kids will challenge sometimes we will say, like, make one that you think is easy or make one that you think is hard. And then that one goes up on the walls. And then all of a sudden we've created another round of kind of checking our understanding to say, like, I thought this one was easy. You thought that one was hard. It keeps that thinking going.
Yeah. And this is a one phase. One phase is where they're going to do it the whiteboards. We'll take some pictures. We'll put three examples into the class Google folder, or the students will take a picture and put it in their OneNote or something like that. But we also have a two-phase version, which is they first do it in the boards together. And they do this together at the whiteboards in their group that they did the vertical whiteboard work with that day. And then they sit down and they individually make one on paper. It has to happen inside the same lesson. And in the two-phase one, they'll copy quadrant one and quadrant two right from their board. But when they get to quadrant three, they start looking around the room going, I like that group's example, their question better. That feels more like where I'm at. And then when they get to the things to remember, they're going, I like what we said there, but I also like what that group said there. And I like what that group said there. And it becomes very metacognitive.
I love that. Really, it forces, again, for students to now notice and name, just like the teacher has to notice and name in before the consolidation. Students are looking around and going, they do their example and they go, okay, I did my example. I look at John's example. I'm like, well, actually, John's, I think, would be more helpful.
Yeah.
Later.
And I like the way they actually showed their example more, right?
Like, right. It's like, I really like how you highlighted the Y-intercept or whatever it is, or what the point where it goes through the line that's up and down. That might be the language you're using at that time.
Yeah. And I see Tammy on here with some notes. Thanks, Tammy. And we've done this with kids as young as kindergarten, right? With our very young kids, we just do the top two quadrants to begin with, right? And we may never get to quadrant three and four. And I know those of you who teach trig are freaking out at the way I numbered the quadrants, but I'm sorry, human psychology doesn't follow standard position angle. But I mean, it's just the way.
Well, and let's be honest, friends, remember, you can take this idea and you can modify. It doesn't have to be exactly organized. And I think that's one of the big pieces here. It's like, what's the goal? What's the intentionality? And if you change something about anything that's been said tonight or in any other session, if you change something, does it still help you to get to the same end goal? Which again is all about every math lesson. Does it help to get me closer to my intended goal? And if that's the case, we're in great shape. Now, Peter, we've only got a couple minutes left here.
So let me say one last thing.
Go ahead.
So teachers often ask, what do I do about, we used to do 8 pages of notes in a lesson. What do I do with that? Put them online. Parents will love you.
I thought you were going to say burn them in the fire. No, I'm just kidding.
Put them online, then burn them in the fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Parents will love you. It's a great backstop. It's not what's connecting to the kids. This connects to the kids.
Right.
I love that. And just to kind of reiterate as well, I think sometimes people think when we do things differently, right? You talked about the normative math classroom, and it's like when we do something different, it's almost like people feel like you're never allowed to use anything from the traditional math class, which is like, I can't use those notes or I can't use this. Some people are like, hey, I can't watch those. I don't even want to name it and get in trouble for it. But certain videos where the speaker is kind of monotone, but those can be helpful at some point, but maybe just not in the beginning when you're trying to learn and introduce these concepts. But when your forgetful self shows up to the party, maybe that's the time where that could still be a useful tool, right? Yeah. So Peter, we don't want to get ourselves in trouble because we said we'd talk about all three. I think we have one more we want to talk about. And this one, I think you do a great job in summarizing, and it doesn't take too much time.
Let's hear
some of the key pieces here.
Okay. So first of all, what does homework look like? We call it check your understanding questions advanced. This is what it looks like. And we give it now in three categories, mild, medium, spicy. So we've seen those in the other, we saw the consolidation at three levels of tasks. We saw the notes, there was three opportunities for examples. And now here comes the check your understanding questions. And they are three levels, mild, medium, spicy. It's non-judgmental, it's non-evaluative, it's about preference. What happens here is that the picture of those students, they're having a mastery experience. They are totally in control of their learning. And what do we need to have for a mastery experience? We need to have success and challenge. So where's the success coming from? Well, I gave them level tasks and I gave them choice. So the rules here is you choose where you want to start. That's rule one. But you do your own, but you choose where you want to start. Rule two is check your answer with the other students at your table. And if you need help, get help. If you can give help, give help. We're ensuring success. Choice and support ensure success, but then we're offering challenge. And then they're seizing that challenge. And when we get that happening, we get that mastery experience. And the biggest problem we have is we can't get the kids to stop. We can't get them to leave. You got to go. The buses are here. It's recess. You got to leave. The other class is coming in. I need to get you out. And they don't want to leave because they're having that moment where they feel like I'm in charge here of my learning. I know what I know and I'm doing great.
You know what, Peter? Great, I must say, I've got a funny feeling that we're going to have the same problem here tonight in this very session with our Math Moment Maker friends when we have to say, friends,
time to go.
It's time to go. Peter is at, it's now 9 o'clock where you are, I believe, right? Yeah. You're Atlantic time. So yeah. 9 p.m. Now, meanwhile, our friends in Australia and all around the world here are laughing. They're like, yes. Peter.
Saturday.
Yeah, I got you beat.
It's Saturday.
I got you beat. Yeah. But my goodness gracious, we covered a lot of ground. Peter, it is always a massive, massive delight to have you when we have you on the podcast, of course. Even better when we have you in the summit, and nothing beats having some great conversations in the hallway at NCTM or any of these live events that we get a chance to bump into you at. Peter, if you had one sort of final message for those people who came in to hear all about the close, what would be sort of your takeaway for them as they get pumped up for the other 30 plus sessions that they're going to be digging into all weekend here?
The close is important. We always have to do one. Set a timer for yourself. I saw Ed Campo say the same thing. Set a timer for yourself so you don't get carried away. Make sure you close. Second thing is the close has to be dynamic. It has to be responsive to what happened in the lesson that day. The third thing is we don't have to do all three. We don't have to do all three, but you got to do one. We got to do something to close off the lesson, right? I try to do two. Sometimes I get three in. I'm going to be teaching in classrooms next week. I'm definitely doing one in all of them. I'm going to try two in some of them, right? It depends on what the lesson is. I've got to be responsive. I've got to be ready. And I got to listen to what the room is telling me. And I'm giving students opportunities to be responsible for their learning rather than accountable.
Love it. Love it. Peter, I want to thank you one more time for joining us here, everyone. There's a million thank yous coming in through here. So thank you again.
Peter, thanks so much, my friend. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for being here. Thanks, Kyle. Thanks, John.
All right. There you have it, folks. That's part two that ends the keynote session from the 2023 Make Math Moments Virtual Summit. In that summit, we had over 30 speakers over the course of that weekend in November of 2023. And this concludes that kind of keynote session where Kyle, Peter, myself talk all about how to close our lessons and the three components of closing those lessons. And specifically, we're talking about our tree on the six areas that we want to strengthen in our classroom trees or our district planning trees. I think what we talked about most here is the branches of our tree, which are the teacher moves. These are the pedagogical moves. And I think my big takeaway is always to think about that closing style, but the note-taking approach for me when I shifted to doing Peter's suggestion in having those four sections on your piece of paper laid out and doing example one, example two, example three, and then notes to future forgetful selves. That was a game changer because it not only allowed our students creativity and choice in their example, but it acted when they create, say, that example, I had them usually create example three. And when they created example three, it almost became, we treated it like a challenge that you could give to your neighbor, your elbow partner, or put it up on one of our whiteboards around the room. And now we were completing new problems around the room at that stage. And I think that was a game changer for me. It allowed that element that could keep the practice going and applying the concepts that we just summarized. And I think that was my big takeaway when I applied that in my classroom. So I would challenge you to think about how you're doing note-taking in your classroom. Are you doing it at the beginning like I used to? Are you doing it at the end like we are doing now in our classrooms, and decide where the thinking happens? Folks, if you want to pick up and start listening to the other summit sessions, you can do that. All the replays of that summit are in our Make Math Moments Academy. You can join that academy now. It is open to join. You can head on over to makemathmoments.com/academy. Get in there. You can listen and binge all of those 30 sessions from, there was the follow-up session to this. Peter's opening session was Pam Harris. We had Pamela Seda.
We also had many other speakers in that summit. So you can head on over to makemathmoments.com/academy and continue the learning alongside all of our classroom ready units and tasks are part of that academy membership, all downloads, handouts for students, and anything you need to run those lessons, teacher guides, they're all there for you. We also have courses on how to strengthen the six parts of your classroom tree. And we have our full assessment course over there on the complete guide to assessment in mathematics. So head on over there, folks, to makemathmoments.com/academy. And hey, show notes and links to resources from this episode, you can find and get links to all those if you're on the fly. Head on over to makemathmoments.com/episode272. Thanks, folks.
Well there, my Math Moment Maker friends. Until next time, I'm Kyle Pierce.
And I'm John Orr.
High fives for us.
And woo! A high five for you.
If you are a district leader of mathematics, a math coach, a math curriculum coordinator, a superintendent, a principal, getting teacher buy-in for effective math teaching practice is top of mind. And plans only go so far. You can make, you know, detailed plans and carefully designed goals with clear objectives and key results that are measurable. But that can feel like it all falls flat if we can't engage our teachers in the work. Working with teachers who do not want to change their teaching practices is one of the most frustrating and challenging parts of our job. How do I help teachers engage in effective teaching practices when they keep pushing us away? If you can't reach the tipping point in mass adoption of effective mathematics teaching strategies, then it's likely we won't see student improvement in mathematics. We have a free training an accompanying workbook for leaders of mathematics like you. The Make Math Moments team, myself, John, and Kyle walk you through our four-stage process we use with district partners to create clear, measurable, sustainable PD action plans, but more specifically on how to also get teacher buy-in so that it drives student engagement. So step one, register for this free training, get your planning workbook, and then watch the training. Schedule some time on your calendar so you can watch it and go through the workbook. After completing that workbook, you're going to have a clear, measurable vision, action plan for mathematics to get more teacher buy-in, but also be able to hit your goals for the 2024-2025 school year. So head on over to makemathmoments.com/4stages to start this free training.